Hi, this is Jeff Klein, ex-IMSA racer, and welcome to F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. Qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial. In the second part of the show, this is podcast number 384, October 15th, 2009. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by the Northern California Jim Russell Rotax Challenge and Marin Karting. Check them out. You know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. And, of course, not only do we love the Northern California Rotax Challenge, but at Marin Karting, they're having a sale.
Winter clearance?
Purchase a new Rotax engine and receive a set of Mojo tires free. Additionally, every motor purchase between now and December 31st comes with an extended factory warranty for 12 months.
Wow.
I'm telling you, Steve.
Now's the time to get into karting.
Yep, there you go, and there you have it. On today's program, Lotus reveals first photos of their 2010 car. Williams says to Toyota, bye bye. Jean Todt a shoo-in for the FIA presidency, and of course Felipe Massa back in the saddle again. And Motorsports Mondial with the guru of racing, Mr. Nasser Hamid. And we have a special interview, or should I say a conversation, between Nasser Hamid and Formula Atlantic's new champion, John Edwards. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you today?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers. And yourself?
Absolutely outstanding. We're going into the final stages of the World Championship. Sebastian Vettel is going to wrap it up. That's right, Steven. You heard it here on today's program.
That's only because he's driving the Renault engine, huh?
It's possible. Hey, you know what? Nothing's going to change. I've been doing this, what, for 15 years now.
Yep. Yeah, you know, the way Button's been racing lately, Vettel has a chance.
Vettel has a big chance. Remember Kimi Raikkonen, 2007.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm excited. I actually like the Brazilian Grand Prix. Good atmosphere, counterclockwise track. Some elevation changes.
Yeah, it's a fun track to watch because you get that basically that dip coming off the front straight, and then they have to come back up the hill to get back to the start finish. They're really fun to watch.
And they love Formula One over there.
Yeah, crazy fans. Always fun.
So it's going to be exciting, and of course, Felipe Massa will be dropping the checkered flag at the end of the race. At least that's what I understand.
Him and two other people, so I'm trying to figure out how they're going to do that. But
Pele is always involved if it's a Brazilian something.
Yeah.
So I figured it'd be Pele and Felipe.
Exactly.
So we'll see what happens, but I'm happy for Felipe. Back in the saddle Monday in the F2007 Ferrari. Apparently, he said it was like nothing had ever happened. He was looking for the red lights to go out.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, but I'm very heartened to hear that. There was the concern, considering he's coming back so quickly, that you know he would be having some issues with the injury. Doesn't sound like he's going to get back in the car this year, though, which we pretty much figured. But good to see him get back into the car to basically get the all clear. And so we know that he's a shoo-in for next season at Ferrari. As muy mucho hombre de España's teammate,
Thank you, Stephen. The laughs will begin in March.
That will be very fun. It will be very interesting to watch preseason testing with Ferrari to see how those times start turning out, and then when we get to that first race of the year, to see how their times match up.
Well, it's a total different beast next year because of no refueling. It really changes everything. I hate to say this, guys, but the cars will change dramatically. They're going to be wider. The radiators will be pushed up forward because they've got to put in
pretty much got
lots of fuel.
Double the fuel loads.
So and it's got to be spread throughout the vehicle so the center of gravity isn't lost as the race continues.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of engineering involved. The cars are going to look different except for the rear wing and the front wing. And it's going to be driver managing the race, managing the fuel, managing the tires, being able to save fuel. The first few races next year are going to be...
going to be interesting. I'm going to be really interested to see if anybody blows it on the fuel calc and ends up coasting to a stop with a lap to go.
Absolutely. It's going to happen because they're going to be... it's going to be nip and tuck. And the driver that burns too much fuel, the rookies, the younger ones... it's going to be trouble in River City.
Yeah, the other concern I have, too, is the fact that now you're going to be driving a car, especially early in the race. It's going to drive like a pig, but it's also going to have a heck of a lot of fuel in it. And accidents at high speeds with double the amount of fuel that you would have had this season. I know that they've got all the safety.
Well, those bladders are pretty
durable,
safe.
But that... could be an interesting thing.
It is going to be interesting, but I'm glad Felipe Massa is doing well. Apparently, he sees perfectly. Everything is fine, but I still think he's more shaken by the fact that his teammate is no longer sleeping.
Yeah, or will no longer be sleeping. No siestas for Fernando.
Exactly. He won't have to go to the next cubicle next door and say, Kimi, wake up.
Time for practice.
So those are going to be the big changes in Felipe's life. I have to have a few laughs, Stephen.
Yes, that's a good one, though.
So there you go. But it's going to be exciting. And, of course, Jenson Button, if he has his act together, and if Braun, you know, I shouldn't put it on all his shoulders. Obviously, Braun, if they have their act together, they can wrap this whole thing up this weekend.
Lock, Stock, and Barrel only get up both championships by the end of the weekend if they do their jobs right. Massively, I don't know if you could say massively inconsistent because they've been consistently poor for the last four or five races and not really competitive like they've been early in the year. I don't know if it's because the other teams have caught up to them or they just haven't been, you know, maintaining their gap as far as performance, but it's almost kind of sad, and it bodes ill for them next season if they're having this much trouble staying ahead of the pack when they had such a huge lead, basically, as far as performance goes. Where's that going to put? They're going to be mid-packers next season, easy.
I agree with that, and that goes to my other talking points is going to be about, does Nico Rosberg want to go to Braun next year? Does anybody want to go to Braun next year? And is Rubinho, the smartest guy in the paddock, leaving Braun for Williams next year? Because I'm telling you.
Well, actually, you know, if Nico goes to Braun, it ends up becoming a lateral move. Because I think that ultimately you've got a car that you're basically going from one privateer to another who has probably as much, might have a little bit more money next season because it sounds like they're going to end up becoming the Mercedes factory team. But even so, they're not going to have enough money to do the development they need to do to be truly competitive. And I think they're going to be a little bit behind the curve.
I think them fighting for the championship this year is going to put them behind next year. If they have the influx from Mercedes next year, they might be competitive by the middle of the season next year. But certainly, they have a lot of work ahead of them. And I was thinking, you know, once again, Nico going from Williams to Braun, will that once again become a big bummer for Nico.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, if you just look at it on the surface right now, it's a lateral move. He's basically going from one privateer to another, maybe a slightly better funded privateer, but not tremendous. I wouldn't expect, you know, Mercedes. The reason Mercedes is walking away from McLaren is because they think they're spending too much money at McLaren. So that means that Braun's not going to get the kind of funding that McLaren's been getting. So, not maybe a good move, but where else will you go?
I don't know.
You go to McLaren and race against Louis?
I thought
that's not really a good career move.
I agree.
And then where else do you go? Ferrari, the seat's already been taken at Ferrari. He might have been able to get the second seat at Ferrari if Felipe had been unable to return. He might have been a choice for them.
No, it's a tough
one. And then the only other, I think the other team that's going to be truly competitive next season is probably going to be Red Bull, because we can see that they can develop and continue to develop. They have pretty deep pockets. You know, they are kind of the car company of the 90s with Red Bull. Actually, it's kind of like having tobacco funding your car when you're supplied by Red Bull. But, you know, and then Renault can turn around. You know,
can.
But, and then what's going to happen to Toyota? Is Toyota even going to be on the grid?
You know what? That's a question we'll know in November. But you're right. I think Nico really doesn't have many choices, and he's just burnt out with Williams. Williams is now saying sayonara to Toyota.
Yeah, which means you're looking at a loss of performance early in the season due to the fact that you're looking at a motor change, which creates an additional set of development that has to be funded above, you know, aero, which slows you down, so to speak, because of that.
Well, I think they'll have an advantage if they go with Renault.
Well, in that Renault, I think, is one of the better teams as far as stepping in and providing support. Look at what Red Bull's been able to do with Renault engines. And so, yeah, I think there might be a little bit more help for them in that regard. But
we'll see what happens. But let's not forget what happened a year ago at Brazil. Felipe Massa's father probably has had a pacemaker installed since that race.
Yeah. You know Felipe's going, oh, darn, Tebow can't mess this up for somebody this year.
Not only that, but he's still bitter about Fernando winning the Singapore Grand Prix and Crashgate and the one we shall not mention.
Yeah, and I completely understand that in that, you know, maybe, well, he ultimately can feel cheated in that. But I don't think he would have scored any better because he probably still makes the same mistake on the pit stop,
exactly,
whether there's a safety car or not.
That's my point, exactly. Dude, that whole scenario started, what, on lap 14? You still had a lot of laps to go. Anything could have happened.
Yes. Oh, not only that, but if they hadn't made the mistake in the pits, he may be, if he's going to rue anything, rue the issue with the stop-start light and pulling away with the fuel hose on, because that's what lost the race. Not the fact that he who shall not be named put his car in the wall to bring out a safety car. There were a lot more other things that caused Felipe to lose that race beyond the safety car that assisted Fernando.
Another demerit, Steven.
Sorry. I got carried away.
Also, you know, I think another team that should be watched next year at the beginning is going to be Force India. They just announced that former senior Honda figure Otmar Schaffnauer, replacing Simon Roberts as chief operating officer. This is a big move. There's some big changes over at Force India. Vijay Mallya has seen the potential, and he wants to take it to the next level. And I think Force India has a great opportunity here.
Well, he's another owner that's got the pockets of, let's say, a Dietrich Matrix, who can basically really dump money into the team that a lot of teams don't have anymore, just because of the global economy. So, and the way they've improved this season, if they could get that car running a little better on the lower speed tracks, they could be a force to be reckoned with.
I agree. But let's get right to the gist of what's going to happen this weekend, and that's Red Bull having to perform. That's Sebastian Vettel having to go out there, and he's got to win this race while Jenson Button languishes either with a DNF
or fails even finishing the points.
Yeah, and I think if I'm Red Bull, and I think Braun's got to almost go with the strategy too, and that you qualify dry.
Just get up front.
Damn near, because you need to be in the first two rows. Because if you start third row or further back, especially on that first turn at Interlagos, you're just courting disaster. You know, we've seen it with the last two, three years where we've got at least two cars out in that first turn or two guys off running off, you know, checking out the waywardness.
I agree with you. They need to be aggressive and dynamic in getting Jensen the chance to finish this up, wrap it up, and not let it languish into Abu Dhabi, the unknown.
You really don't want to go to that track hoping for the best because you've got a completely new track. You don't know what the surface is going to be like. You don't know what the tires are going to end up like. I'm sure Bridgestone's been running some kind of testing to see how abrasive the track is, but you never know. You know, they're going in with softs and super softs and find out that the super softs last two laps and you're like totally out to lunch and, you know, grandmaing it around the track because you've got no tire. Could be really dicey. And then you got Abu Dhabi. You got a desert climate. It's going to be a night race, but you never know, you know, how much dust we're going to have to worry about. And you could easily see a situation like we saw in Singapore where compared to last, how much more dust there was on the track because of the construction around the track. Too many ifs to try to carry this into Abu Dhabi. And I think it benefits if Red Bull can still be in it after this weekend in Brazil, they've really got a solid chance of pulling it out because it becomes basically a coin flip.
Absolutely. And then you have the spoilers like Mark Webber, who could perform really well and do everything for his teammate and for his team, period.
Exactly.
Also, we have McLaren, who's performing well at the end of this season, doing an outstanding job. Lewis Hamilton, capable of winning race after race now with a competitive car.
And then you throw Kimi in that mix, too. You know,
Kimi intends to be on the podium.
Yeah, so.
Absolutely. Ferrari, forget Fisichella because he's got mental issues.
Well, he really can't seem to find. He can't figure out how to drive this car. So.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not blaming it all on Giancarlo Fisichella, but they wanted an Italian in there. They got one, and so be it. Kimi's going to do an outstanding job for his last two races. And he could cause a lot of problems for the Braun GP team. Also, Renault announced yesterday they are super aggressive on these last two races. They want to finish sixth in the Constructors' Championship. So everybody is out to get everybody.
Right. Everybody's trying to maximize points because they know that they can seal their spots in the Constructors and really want to perform well because, you know, some of the money is tied to how many points you end up with.
Exactly, and Renault announcing that they are going to come up with some new livery for the last two races, something dynamic. And I'm just hoping they just go back with the vintage black and yellow livery of the vintage olden days, which they showed off, I think, in 2007 at either Goodwood or Silverstone, I can't remember. But it looked great on the car. Let's get rid of that orange. ASAP.
Yeah, it would be nice to see them go back to more traditional Renault colors. I think you probably hit on the head. It's probably going to be gold, white, and black. And then maybe throw a little bit of the blue.
For Fernando's last escapade with Renault.
Exactly.
No, I agree. And quickly, let's go right to the FIA elections. I mean, we've been whining and complaining about Max Mosley. Some people think he is wonderful. Some people think he's terrible, but he's done a lot of good things. Some people think he's terrible, and he's just terrible. But the end is finally near. And it's amazing how long this guy's lasted. Because believe it or not, he replaced Jean-Marie Balestre. I mean, we're talking eons ago.
I know.
It's absolutely fascinating.
It's amazing that he's been able to hold on to it for so long, considering how controversial he's been at times. But he's obviously been pushing the sport in the right direction. And it sounds to me like he's kind of knows the ins and outs of the backroom play within the FIA for getting the votes he needs. Because it sounded like there was some forum talk about how he was trying to manipulate some of the auto clubs by going, you know, if you don't vote for Jean and he wins, you may not ever see a race in your country again.
Exactly. So it's going to be interesting, but of course it's between Jean Todt and Ari Vatanen, and Michael Schumacher has written an open letter to the FIA member clubs reiterating his support for Jean Todt in the FIA presidential election, insisting that the former Ferrari team boss will implement major changes and be good for the sport, period.
You gotta, you know, you would expect Michael Schumacher to support his old boss. Didn't they win like 5 world championships together? So they're probably really good friends. And, you know, that's a good guy to speak for you. You know, I think it doesn't really matter so much to me anymore as to who wins it, so long as it's not Max. And Max walks away and doesn't attempt to try to, you know, manipulate the, you know, the Motorsports Council from beyond the grave, so to speak.
I agree. No, but I don't know. From talking to my connections in France, I think Jean Todt's got it. And Schumacher says, I can only tell these people that they do not know Jean. He has his own expert knowledge, his own agenda, and his own leadership style. From my experience, he will implement his plans for the FIA in his own way as a team player, unquote. So, keep up the good work, Michael Schumacher. He's putting it out there that he's supporting one person, which I think is great. You know, don't be wishy-washy.
Yeah, and who he's supporting is not a big surprise.
No, I don't expect him to support some guy from Finland.
Yeah. Didn't you have a teammate from Finland? No, we didn't.
No, we didn't. But anyway, so there you have it. And there it is. I believe Jean Todt will win. But I've been wrong so many times on this show that if I had a nickel for each time I was wrong, I'd be a millionaire.
You'd be retired. You wouldn't be doing the show anymore.
So there you have it, Stephen. We're going to go to a quick break while the limo pulls up with the man himself, Mr. Nasser Amin, to bring us Motorsports Mondial. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Are you between the ages of 8 and 80 and want to experience the thrill of wheel-to-wheel racing for yourself? Do you want a hobby that you, your family, or group of friends can share? The Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series, sponsored in part by Marin Karting, is the fast-growing Northern California series of the Rotex Max Challenge USA and can lead to an FIA-approved world championship. Rotex answers your dream of racing. With a reliable engine that's sealed, keeps carts on the same level playing field, your operating costs low, your fun level high, and your skill determining your success. Be your own number one driver as part of the Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series. Race on to NorCalRotex.com to learn more. And see MarinKarting.com for Rotex engines, parts, and accessories.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers, the host of F1Weekly.com. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the man himself, Mr. Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and racing regards. Today we have action from the hills of California to Mount Panorama in Australia. At Laguna Seca, John Edwards becomes the youngest champion in Formula Atlantic history, while Jan Magnussen takes a nasty hit in his little yellow Corvette. From Scottish Highlands to the Tennessee Blue Ridge Mountains. Did I get the mountain range correct, sir?
I believe so.
Okay, cool. Dario Franchitti outfoxes teammate and Ryan Briscoe to win the IRL Championship for the second time in 3 years. And Tom Walkinshaw's team is at the top at Mount Panorama. Did you catch any of the racing action from the American Le Mans Series on TV?
I did catch a few highlights. It was exciting. And the American Le Mans Series is a good series. There's a lot of activity and some good driving and racing.
Did you watch the crash with Jan Magnussen?
Nope.
Pretty vicious accident.
I closed my eyes.
You can't see a Corvette crashing. That would be a first. Okay, moving on with the American Le Mans Series. This was, of course, in our own backyard, beautiful Mazda Raceway at Laguna Seca near Monterey. A season finale took place for three series, American Le Mans, Formula Atlantic, and Formula Star Mazda. Gilles de Ferrand went out as a racing driver on a high note, winning the American Le Mans Series race in his Acura with co-driver and your homeboy, Simon Pagenaud. I ran into Simon Pagenaud at Le Mans. He was very surprised to see me. He goes, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I want to watch a race. That's what I'm doing here." The LMP2 Acura of Adrian Fernandez and Luis Diaz was second, two hombres from Mexico, completing the podium sweep by Acura drivers and winning the LMP1 championship overall with David Brabham and Scott Sharp. A pretty big year for David Brabham, also was in the winning car at Le Mans. All hell broke loose when ex-F1 driver Jan Magnussen in a Corvette tried to muscle his way past the Porsche of Jörg Burgmeister after the final corner of the final lap. Just like Senna on Prost in Portugal 1988, Burgmeister drove Magnussen to the pit wall where the Corvette impacted the pit wall and bounced across the track for a heavy impact. Good news is both drivers are okay but have been put on probation for next season. And you know, I believe it was maybe a year or two ago, a similar thing happened between a Ferrari and a Porsche. I remember the Ferrari driver was Jamie Mello, who was Mika Salo's teammate, and the Porsche, I believe, was Jörg Burgmeister. Pretty push and shove, and at that time, Burgmeister, who or whoever was driving the Porsche, got the short end of the stick. But this time, they came out on top. Laguna Seca is a nice place to go and to watch a race. Very nice facility, and of course, very nice location. Formula Atlantique, John Michael Edwards of Cincinnati pulled a 2007 Kimi Raikkonen-style championship grab, the man who came in from the cold. Going into the final race, Edwards was third in the championship behind Simona Di Silvestro. All she had to do was finish sixth to become the first lady champion of the series, and Jonathan Summerton also had a chance. He was second in the series before the final race. The race turned out to be a case of harder you work, the luckier you get. John Edwards led the race from start to finish, and Simona crashed out before the opening lap was over, and that's all she wrote. John Edwards wins his second championship in 2 years in the final race at Laguna Seca. Last year, he was crowned Formula Star Mazda champion, and I did an interview with him, which we will be posting shortly, and also with other drivers, including Jonathan Summerton. And John Edwards is, you know, of course, like he said, he's on cloud 36, is hoping to maybe get into IndyCar racing. So we wish him all the best. And you know who the youngest driver was before he clinched the title? Your favorite.
No kidding.
Michael Andretti.
Really?
Yeah.
Sponsored by Jim Beam?
Not in those days. No. I think it was maybe Craig or somebody else. But this series used to be a very strong series, just like Race of Champions in the old days.
Back in the old days, a lot of good people.
Yeah, Gilles Villeneuve made a name in this series. James Hunt raced here. Keke Rosberg raced here. And, of course, all the usual American up-and-coming drivers, apart from Michael L. Jr. and Danny Sullivan. Okay, another series there was Formula Star Mazda. Their race and championship was won by Adam Christodoulou of England. And keep an eye on this kid, very quick. He was quite a sensation in karting also in his younger days. His brother is racing back home and is also pretty quick. Peter Dempsey was second in the championship. And Connor Daly, son of Derek Daly, was third. And Connor is hoping to race in Europe next season. And so I'm hoping that we should have at least two or three good, talented American drivers in a feeder series in Europe next year. What I really, really do not want to see is some kid from here going to compete, young kid going to compete in Europe and jumping in like, I'm going to kick ass in F3 Euro Series right away or GP2. That doesn't work. Okay. Now we go to Australian V8. I know Mr. Fab is quite a fan of, you know, talking of the other day, you were saying the other network, HDTV, what is it called, Discovery Channel?
HD Theater. HD Theater, yeah.
I watched a program. It was on the Great Rally Cars of the War. Excellent program. This is the sort of programming that Speed Vision used to show.
Yeah, and they basically, when you guys left last week, they were showing the rally of Ireland, and then over the weekend they did Rally of Norway.
I saw some of that also.
Yeah.
And then they had the TT Superbike Challenge, Isle of Man, I think. TT.
Yes, excellent.
That
stuff.
Is, yeah.
And they've had the history of the BMW motorcycle, the history of the Yamaha motorcycle.
Really?
Just very, very.
In racing?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Very good stuff.
Very,
this channel is developing some machismo.
Yeah, that is good, because Speed TV has now, because of high popular demand, introduced a new show called NASCAR Hub. As if they did not have enough.
They're really just keeping an open mind.
Oh, absolutely. So I'm hoping, you know, that HDTV could pick up some Euro series, Australian V8.
Australian V8 would look really good on that.
And you know what? A good thing to do is for everybody to email HD Theater, their a division of Discovery.
Yeah, exactly. And I would love to see someday Macau Grand Prix, the F3 race, which is the poor race. I mean, these are very historic motor races.
And some vintage stuff.
Yeah,
the Lap of the Gods.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I know that. I think last year I've seen Goodwood.
Yes,
covered.
I've seen the Goodwood the revival with. Actually, it was very interesting. It was Graham Rahal, it was Bobby Rahal. And Peter Windsor.
Yeah, good. Okay, so we go back to Australian V8 and their biggest race, the super cheap Auto Bathurst 1000. Winners were Will Davison and Garth Tender in a Holden Commodore operated by Tom Walkinshaw's team. Holden Cars, a fair dinkum quality product of GM Australia, took the top four places. The highest place, Ford Falcon, was in fifth, driven by Craig Lowndes and Jamie Wincup. A1GP, you remember this series?
I remember I went to one.
Yeah, the one and only at Laguna Seca.
Did you drive Ferraris?
Yeah, but you know, cars driven, built by Ferrari and powered by Ferrari. Anyway, cars remain locked up for unpaid bills. No one knows what engines they will have because it looks like Ferrari is not going to supply the engines. But boss man Tony Teixeira is talking of season opener on October 25th at Surfers Paradise in Australia. 19 teams are confirmed, including Team USA, also known as Team Papito. Teams from Lebanon and Malaysia are missing from this year's entry, but my people are coming back. It remains to be seen who will, A, own the franchise of A1 Team Pakistan and also then drive the car. And talking of Team Pakistan, I was talking to you about before the show. I was chatting recently with a friend of mine, Mr. Adnan Sarwar. He is making a big push to promote karting and motorsports in the country. And he has held some events there and, trying to expand it to different parts of the country. So I told him, I said, hey, if I can be of any help in terms of, those checks from F1 Weekly are not allowed by State Bank of Pakistan. But I said, anything else, ideas, information, organization, and, I actually even sent an email to our friend, Mr. Adrian Schwarzberg, who runs the Marin Karting Rotax Championship. So I'm going to, and they're also planning to introduce Rotax type, machinery. So I'm going to hook up with Adrian and see if we can help the people. It's all about people.
That's a beautiful thing, Nasser.
Yeah, and, we'll see what we can do.
Pakistan needs a little help right now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, in more than one ways. But, I'm very, very interested in helping them out and, providing some sort of a game plan, All these countries, India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, there is a lot of passion in these places for motor racing, I'm one of them. And it can happen, especially when you have a huge pool of people. Even if you don't have a lot of resources like all rich countries, the manpower is your power, So like this kid I met, Adam Khan, who was with Team Pakistan here, he was born and raised in England. He has good potential, but, he has moved around in different cities, so I don't know what he's going to do this year. But we'll see what we can do. Okay, moving on to, and talking of A1GP and the Laguna Seca, I read a news item that people who organize World Touring Car Championship, they are planning to have a race in the United States.
No way.
Seriously, and they are their first
choice. With Chevrolet.
With Chevrolet and BMW and Seat, great concept, it will be great. And, they have got a few big-name drivers. Alex Zanardi is driving for them. in that series, but they were saying they might do it in Miami because they already race in Puebla, Mexico, so it'll be easier.
Yeah, it'll probably be wet East Coast just because logistically it'll be easier for them than, say, coming out to Laguna Seca.
Yeah, but see, even then, it will be still flown, I would imagine. So, you know, a four-hour flight to 5.5, you know, it's only money, as they say.
Yeah, but Sebring or something. You could always go up to Georgia, go to Road America.
Dude, you want something in California.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
maybe, you know, next year when they do two races in the States.
Yeah. So you know, it's good. You okay, Mr. Rogers?
I'm fine. I just took a sedative.
The rockets have reached stratosphere, so don't worry about it. Okay. F3 Euro Series at Dijon-Prenois. That should make you happy. Thank you. Local driver Jules Bianchi won Sunday's race 2 and wrapped up the 2009 championship, driving for ART Grand Prix team, which is co-owned by Nicolas Todd. Lewis Hamilton, Romain Grosjean, and Nico Hülkenberg all won F3 Euro Series championship with ART Grand Prix team. I believe the last five champions consecutively have been with ART team. Very impressive. Winner in race one on Saturday was Christian Fittoris of Germany, with Bianchi second. DTM, they race together normally, right? Same billing. DTM race was won by Gary Paffert in a Mercedes, and the championship will be decided in the final round of October 25th. That's the final race at Hockenheim Ring, and yours truly will be there. And I'm hoping to get an interview with Cora Schumacher.
So you should have got that day right if you're going to be there.
It's a typo. It's a JPEG typo.
If you want to be in Europe a week earlier is what that is.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I will be, you know. I will be hooking up with our good friend, Mr. Peter Brazier. And our plan is to... I get there on Sunday morning. So our plan is to... He has invited me to watch the motor race with him, the Brazilian Grand Prix. And then we go to Mark Weber's restaurant, El Macio, for some grub, Rue Burger or something like that, and Victoria Bitter. So that should be fun. And also our friend, you know, originally from Spain, who lives in Holland now, Javier Vicente Garcia, the music man, he will be performing in England, and he sent me his phone number, and I would very much like to have a F1 Weekly Familia get-together somewhere in London area. Wouldn't that be cool?
I think it's wonderful.
Thank you. And if you give me a T-shirt for these people, I'll be happy to carry for you.
We have no T-shirts.
T-shirt stickers?
Yeah, we got that.
Okay, thank you. Okay, where are we now? DTM. Okay, we're talking about the DTM. This was victory number 3 for Paffert for the season. Remember when his name was being linked with McLaren Formula One driver?
Well, he's still officially a test driver.
For yeah. McLaren. And also the name of Bruno Spengler, which is coming up, his name was also linked with Pro Drive. But for some reason, with all these new teams coming, I don't see Paffert's name or even Bruno Spengler's name. Paul Di Resta, cousin of Dario Franchitti, was second, and pole sitter from Canada, Bruno Spengler, finished third. IRL, Indy Racing League. The IndyCar season came to an end in Homestead, Florida. While Scott Dixon and Ryan Briscoe battled hard, Dario Franchitti raced smart and, in his own words, outfoxed both of them on fuel strategy to win the race and the championship, his second in 3 years. The previous championship was with Andretti Green Racing. Any thoughts on the IRL season, the championship, or
it goes to show you that if you go to NASCAR for a year and get some proper racing training, then when you go back to open wheels, it's cake.
Well, you've just given away a Dario secret.
It's so obvious.
Ashley's going to get pissed off at you now.
I'm telling
she
you.
She might smack
that's,
you.
That's why I believe Juan Pablo Montoya will be making a comeback.
Yeah. Did you see it?
Actually, if anybody should jump, it should be A.J. Allmendinger. Yeah.
A few years ago when Dario Franchitti won the Indy 500 and it was rain shortened and all that, did you see Ashley Gerrard?
Are we still talking about this?
Absolutely. It was raining all day long in California, so why not talk about rain at Indy and Ashley Gerrard?
In 2006 or 2007?
Yeah. You got issues, man.
I have big issues.
I can see. Okay, NASCAR from, okay, we're up to your favorite series.
Actually. Now we're talking racing.
Yeah, exactly. From Fontana, no surprise here, Jimmy Johnson was the winner. Nationwide race was won by Joey Logano. And, you know, our man Jackson in North Carolina, he's got to be a happy camper now. Now they have a NASCAR Hall of Fame there. the USF one there. So
that's why we don't hear from him anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
He's stuck in that Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Staring at Mark Martin's overalls.
And five NASCAR legends were nominated to the Hall of Fame. No surprise here. Bill France Sr. and Jr. Bill France Sr., of course, being the founder of NASCAR. And Richard Petty, famous 43, Dale Earnhardt Sr. and Junior Johnson. Petty and Earnhardt both won seven NASCAR championships, which is, of course, very, very impressive.
No Cale Yarborough?
Well, they only were taking five, so I'm sure
he'll
come.
Cale will be in there.
Yeah, in second round. And in race win, Petty has 200 wins and Earnhardt 76. Okay, moving on, which is what you would want me to do, rapido. Right?
Rapido, si.
Gracias. In other news, Otmar Szafnauer, who is from the United States and was previously with Honda F1 team, has been appointed as the new chief operating officer at Force India. He is replacing Simon Roberts, who is headed back to McLaren. And Otmar is originally from the land of Dracula. He was born there, Romania, and then moved to Detroit when he was 7 years old with his family, of course. Lotus, their new car can now be seen on autosports.com, and I'm sure other sites also. I wonder if Mike Gascoigne will commute from Manchester to Malaysia like he did when he worked at Toyota. And what they are trying to do is, oh, I wish them well, is trying to, their agenda is to have all Malaysian crew, nothing wrong with that, all Malaysian driver and move the whole base to Malaysia. None of this is anything wrong with that, but I think you need to have some basic grassroots support or the basic industry infrastructure for a Formula One team has to be there. What say you?
I agree. Look at what USF1 started talking about. Now they're admitting they may not even have an American driver. So you start with a thought and a concept, and then you realize the concept is not realistic, and you move on.
Kind of like putting pictures on the webpage. I start with a thought, and then it just goes out of control.
That's the way it is, Nasser.
I understand.
Well, labor costs will be cheaper in Malaysia.
Very true. Okay, Jean Alesi and his new motivation. The ace of Avignon will be back racing a Ferrari next season. Plan is to race in the Le Mans series in the GT2 category, driving for AF Corse, which is headed by Signor Amato Ferrari. No word on the relationship with Enzo. BBC Men on the Track, BBC announcer anchorman Jake Humphrey raced at Silverstone past weekend in the Lotus On-Track Elise Trophy. This guy does a pretty good job for the Beeb. You watch him because you watch all the races. Do you enjoy his work?
I do.
Yeah, I think he does. You know that guy who's their host, Jonathan Ledyard, I believe his name, he's okay. This guy's pretty
good.
Not
the greatest.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's not the host of F1 Weekly.
Right? Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a different standards there. But they're a guy who does the... I was very surprised they did not take the guy to host a BBC TV thing. The guy who does their podcast, BBC Checkered Flag, David Croft. Very, very good.
But some of these people don't look good on TV. Hence the podcasts.
Yeah.
So that was what radio
are,
was
are you saying
for
V is ugly?
I'm just telling you what the industry dictates.
Oh, I'm
that's why
now.
We have 380 shows on a podcast that's only audio, and we only have two shows where we actually show up on screen.
Wow. And those have been altered.
Digitally altered?
Yes, to make us look attractive.
Okay, and when is... Well, the number 400 is coming. Is that going to be on a...
No.
No?
No hoopla, no nothing.
Really?
We're cutting the budget here.
Wow.
The video room has been... Video out.
Video killed the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, some sad news finally. Jaime Alguersuari's grandfather passed away at the age of 90. He was apparently a very well-known sports photographer and won the prize for the best image of the 1960 Olympics in Rome, Italy. So that wraps up the Motorsports Mondial. Any thoughts you have for the race coming up?
Yes, I'm looking forward to Renault being aggressive and dominating and being the spoiler. And I think Vettel is going to do an outstanding job. And I think this championship is going to go to Abu Dhabi.
What say you, Mr. Favre?
I would tend to agree with him. We were talking about this briefly in the beginning, that we think that both Red Bull and Braun need to be extremely aggressive in qualifying to try to get in the first two rows, because that first turn at Interlagos can be Carnage City if you're not careful, especially if you're behind the first four cars.
Well, you know, I've mentioned this. I don't like championship going to the final race.
Two left now, sir.
I understand. I want this thing settled in Sao Paulo. And I got to tell you something. I was watching the Formula Atlantic race where when Simona crashed out on the opening lap, it was between Jonathan Summerton, who was second, and his teammate John Edwards, who was first and on pole position. And they were throughout the race, they were like about a second from each other, and Edwards led from start to finish. And I got to tell you, last few laps, this old age is getting too much for me.
Well, that's what the excitement that we want here.
Okay, you shall be rewarded.
Exactly. And Felipe Massa's father will be available for comment in the next show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. I had no idea he was hanging out in California.
Thank you, Nasser, for another outstanding Motorsports Mundial. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with the wrap-up.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
And now, our special interview with our Formula Atlantics newly crowned champion, John Edwards.
Okay, Clark, you know, we've interviewed John Edwards a few times, nice young kid from Cincinnati, and he was many years ago the youngest winner of a motor race in this country, and then was picked up by Red Bull, did some karting in Europe, and won a Formula Renault race at Anderstorp, Sweden. And a couple of years ago, and I actually asked him in the interview, he was racing as a very young kid in Formula Atlantic. Then he did a very, very smart thing, and this really goes back to what I keep saying about American drivers going to Europe. He stepped down from Formula Atlantic to Formula Star Mazda and won their championship last year. It gave him a lot of confidence, and it was very good for his career. And most importantly, when you win the Star Mazda championship, you get a fully funded drive in Formula Atlantic. And this year he had that, so you didn't have to worry about funding and sponsorship. Won the season opener in Sebring, and then he won a couple of other races. Actually, he won the doubleheader at the Autobahn racetrack, and then won the final race in pretty dominating style, pole position, led from start to finish. Interestingly, his teammate was Jonathan Summerton. Both tied on the points, both had four wins, but John Edwards got the championship because he had more second-place finishes. So his future is looking good, and it's looking good for Jonathan Summerton also. And let's see what John Edwards come up on his campaign trail next season, and we wish him all the best.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Laguna Seca with John Edwards, and we're going to talk about his hot affair with the 2009 Formula Atlantic Championship, which he has just won. First of all, sir, how are you, and congratulations.
Thanks. I had someone tell me just shortly after we got off the podium that I looked like I was on cloud 36, and I got to say I still feel that way. It's been an incredible year, even without the championship, even if we had finished in third where we were before this race. But the race fell into place just the way we needed it to. Simona had an unfortunate problem for her, and that's exactly what we needed to happen for us to get by her. And then all I had to do was beat Jonathan in the race and get the bonus point for pole, and that's what I did. So we ended up tied on points, and I beat him on the tiebreaker, and everything came out okay for me in the end.
Yeah, you basically pulled out a Kimi Räikkönen from the 2007 season. Talking of Simona, who was leading the championship before the race, had she stayed in the race, let's say in the top five, were there any team orders for you guys to basically gang up and make sure one of you guys win and not her?
Well, I think if nothing could have changed for me, then I would have done everything I could to help the team move up. But fortunately, it didn't come to that. So I was able to stay in the lead and get the win.
Did you feel a lot of pressure in the last 10 minutes? And how long did the last 10 minutes last? It was a timed race.
It was more like the last 30 minutes that it seemed to last about 6 hours. you know, just praying they would throw the checkered sometime soon. Even though I knew it wasn't going to happen in that short a time, I was just hoping the flag would come out. But it took what seemed like hours to me, because you were just focusing on turning laps, consistent laps, and not making any mistakes. Because the lap times didn't matter so much. It was give or take a tenth to Jonathan. And even if he had gotten closer to me within half a second, it would have been another thing to pass, especially in these cars.
Last year we met at the same place, and you had just won the Star Mazda Championship, winning two championships in 2 years. What does this do for your confidence, cockiness, arrogance, and your future?
Well, it's pretty special. Haven't really had a chance to take a moment and appreciate it. I had a short moment when they were playing the anthem to just sort of look back and realize I was the Atlantic champion for 2009. And it's interesting because I've been on both sides of it. I've been the guy going into the race that just had to finish and just had to have a decent result in the top five last year in Star Mazda. And now this year I've been the guy that's had to go out and win and get the bonus point for pole and win the race. And I think that's done something for me, to learn that as a driver, but also added a ton to my resume. And hopefully I can use the back-to-back championships to help me move forward.
Okay. Now, you won the season opener at Sebring, and I was lucky and fortunate enough to talk to you at that time also. What were the highs and lows of the season for you?
Well, all four wins were easily the highs. I think Autobahn was definitely the best weekend session to session that I've ever had. We were quickest in every session that we participated in, seeing as the car we had a problem in one of the first practices. But every other session we were quickest and quickest by a lot. And that was definitely one of the more special weekends to appreciate what we had done and that we were able to dominate every session. Next to that's probably this weekend, having the pieces fall into place. There were a lot of things that had to happen for us to win the championship. So we just went out and aimed to win the race, and that's what we did.
Okay, now you're tied in the championship, and you win the tiebreaker because of your second place finishes. Is it more pressure when the competition for the championship is from your own teammate?
I wouldn't say that it's more or less pressure. It adds a different dimension to it because we're always working together and we're always trying to go faster than the rest of the cars. But then when we put the helmets on, we're trying to go faster than each other. So it certainly adds a different dimension, especially being able to come in and see the data and see the data and the video and see where each other are quicker and see what we're doing differently. So it was a different challenge than last year, but I think ultimately having a competitive teammate is helpful because you have that data and that analysis after the sessions.
And briefly, the difference between a Star Mazda car and Atlantic car, also powered by Mazda, what's more fun to drive and what are the main differences?
Downforce. Downforce is a huge difference, and even though the lap times are only 4 or 5 seconds quicker, it feels like a completely different car to drive. But the power plants are pretty much the same, especially with the added grip of the Atlantic car. You don't notice a big difference between the two series, but you notice a huge difference in grip levels and the way you drive the car in Atlantics.
Now, you know, this is your second time around in Atlantic, and this is just my opinion. I don't know if you did it because of being so smart or sponsorship issues, but when you stepped down from Atlantic and went to Star Mazda last year, I think it was a very, very smart decision. What say you?
I think it ended up being one of the smartest decisions we've made, but ultimately it came down to a bit of a lack of funding and as well as some advice from some other people. My team manager at the time, who's now with the Atlantic Series, John Bruner, was one of the first to suggest it. And there were some others that agreed and said it would be a wise choice. And I was still pursuing Atlantics, but didn't have the money to do that. And I had money to do Star Mazda, so I decided it was better to go for a full budget rather than a half season or a half budget. And ultimately, I ended up learning more than I think I could have in a second consecutive year of Atlantics.
And talking of learning, what was the biggest lesson learned from your rookie season in Atlantics?
One lesson. I'd say I learned more from the Star Mazda and my second Atlantic season. I learned a lot in that season, but mostly about driving and less about how to handle pressure and how to handle race situations and how to handle championship situations. I learned all of those key skills in Star Mazda and Atlantics this year, and hopefully that will propel me forward.
Okay, who is managing and guiding your career at this time?
My dad is my also has the quotes after his name as official manager of John Edwards. So I have to say thanks to him because he's responsible for I guess managing, coaching, and sponsoring me all the way up until a couple years in Formula Renault Europe and Atlantics, and then this year in Atlantics. He's paid my way every other time, and certainly sacrificed a lot of his own racing and a lot of his own benefits. So I have to say thanks to my manager and dad and sponsor and many other titles that I couldn't have time to list here.
Okay, that's great. Now at Sebring, you told me one of the concerns you have for your open wheel career is your height. Has the scale moved since Sebring?
Fortunately, no. I'm happy to say that I have the same seat that I made at the beginning of the year, and I haven't gotten too big for it. So fortunately, I haven't grown this year, and I don't think I'll be growing anymore.
And the team did not have to raise the roll bar?
And no, not at all.
Okay, cool. Okay, you have raced in Europe before. Any chance we might see you in GP3 or Formula 2 series in 2010 or any other agenda you may have?
We
need scoops here.
I wish I had scoops to give, actually, but at this point there's too many unknowns. We've looked at a number of series, all the way from from stepping over to lights, moving up to IndyCar, moving to Europe, doing a number of things. But in the end, it's going to come down to sponsorship dollars and the seats that are available. So we'll see how it plays out in the off season. But I don't expect to know anything soon, as much as I would like to.
It will be / daddy / manager / agent making all those decisions?
No, he's more of an agent coach now, I guess. Okay. He's sponsored me the whole way, but now he's made a point to let me make my own decisions and sort of I guess he's one of my advisors, that you could say.
Now, if sponsorship was not an issue and you could go to any series, realistically, which series should be your next step?
I think I would like to move up to IndyCar. It seems like a logical choice, and people, I always talk about the ovals and that you need to learn those in lights, but there's plenty of open-wheel guys that have made the cross step to IndyCar from other series in the past and hadn't had a short time learning the ovals. So not that it's easy to learn the ovals, but I think it's a skill that can be learned in IndyCar without a season in lights.
Okay, next question. We've talked about it, off the record. Now let's get it on the record. Any interest in the USF1 program?
I have a lot of interest in the USF1 program, but I don't think it's a wise choice for me for 2010. I think it's almost a setup for failure. I think in 2011 or 2012, on down the road, that's something I would love to pursue, but In the past couple of years, I've learned that I'm still very young and need some time to develop. As much as I wish that I could just go right now and race at the pinnacle of motorsport, but I think that it's a wiser choice to race at that pinnacle when the opportunity is right.
Now, Formula One season is coming to an end, and I'm sure you follow that. Who would you like to see win the championship?
I've always been a big Kimi fan, but I know he can't win the championship now. So I've met Sebastian Vettel in person when we were part of the Red Bull program, and he's a very stand-up guy and a great driver. I respect him a lot on the track and off the track. So I'd like to see Sebastian win it, and that's nothing against the other contenders, but because I don't know them personally, but I've been cheering for Sebastian.
Okay, going back to your Atlantic season, who were some of the tough competitors this year for you that you respect as racing drivers?
Well, obviously the top three were pretty much the top three the whole season, especially in the last five or six races. So Simona and Jonathan have had great seasons, and I consider myself fortunate to be ahead of them in the end of the year. I've respected both of them a lot, and sort of have felt better about myself to be ahead of them when those times do come up.
And finally, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly, please?
Listen to F1 Weekly. Keep listening, and I'd appreciate checking out my website, johnedwardsracing.com. We've changed the name, so it's John Michael Edwards will redirect to John Edwards Racing. But it's a new name, new website, and I hope you continue to follow me and continue to follow F1 Weekly.
We will, and continue winning, please.
I'm working on it.
Thank you very much.
John Edwards, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host, and now let's go right to the wrap-up. We have no forum updates. We have no time for emails, so we're going right to my plugs. San Francisco Formula One Group are having another great happening. This time is for the Grand Prix of Brazil, live from Interlagos. It'll be Sunday, October 18th, 8:30 a.m. pre-race. The flag drops at 9, and this time they're at Go Kart Racer, 1541 Adrian Road, just minutes south of beautiful San Francisco in downtown Burlingame. You can give them a call and make your reservations for your kart at 650-692-7223. Speaking of karts, Marin Karting is proud to organize and support the 2009 Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Series. Marin Karting offers CRG karts, engines, and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. For more information, contact Marin Karting at marinkarting.com, or you can also pick up the phone and dial 415-898-0999. I want to mention our MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter sites. Lots of activity, communications, and just a regular good time for all. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. I want to thank Toby Dawes, our executive producer, Mr. David Tapia, of course, Mr. Nasser Hamid, and Steve Fobb for making this show possible. Good night. Good night.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.